Taste of the Oscars as the governor's awards are handed out in Los Angeles. Ed Donahue with more.
Angela Lansbury finally has an Oscar. Many thought she should have won more than 50 years ago for her role in The Manchurian Candidate.
To sweep us up into the White House with powers that will make martial law seem like anarchy.
Also winning an honorary Oscar, former Oscar night host Steve Martin.
I actually love that it's not a part of the big show.
Angelina Jolie received the Jean Hersholt Humanitarian Award for her work with the United Nations helping refugees. Jolie got emotional when she thanked her late mother.
She was very clear that nothing would mean anything if I didn't live a life of use to others.
I'm Ed Donahue.
Nigerian police say a French engineer who was kidnapped in northern Nigeria 11 months ago has escaped on a motorcycle without paying any ransom. Police presented the 63-year-old to reporters today before he was to fly back to France. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody, welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I consider that cheap comment an insult. And
well,
when
then
we
change
have,
the opening
when
of the
we're
show.
We're on TV, it's I am. I'm going to change it to Beast and the Foodie. How about that?
I don't think anybody will listen.
Take the YouTube
so you
to do that, too. Mm-hmm. All right, so we got a great show. Just before we get into it, I want to say we got to get a first taste at Iron Gate last night. Neighborhood Restaurant Group's new restaurant, and it was awesome.
It was
wonderful.
I used
to eat there in the 80s, and it's much different.
It is much different. Do you want to tell people how it's much different?
No, I don't think we have time to get into it, but it was very good. It's Mediterranean and beautiful and delicious, and you should go there.
Okay, there you go. All right.
All right, so I don't know if you know this. I've been waiting actually 77,000 years, and I'll wait another 77,000 years because Thanksgiving is coming up.
That's is he saying it right? Thanksgiving
No, actually, it's Thanksgivica.
No, not where I come from, baby. Susan Barocas is with us with the Jewish.
He's Ashkenazi, right?
I'm trying Jeez, is this my show or?
No.
Be quiet. Susan Barocas with the Jewish Food Experience is here. We're going to be talking about the collision of Thanksgiving and Hanukkah. Which is the only one literally for the next 77,000 years. So catch it now because you ain't going to be here for the next one.
And but leave the recipes in a box on the counter for
just
your
in case.
Descendants.
Just in case. Absolutely. And 8th Street Northeast is heating up even more. We're so lucky to have Brad Walker in studio from Boundary Road. He's going to be doing an in-studio demo. And does your palate change when you fly? Maybe that's why airline food doesn't taste so good. We're going to find out from James Clore. He's the SOM with Qatar Airways. We're going to talk about wine tasting at 30,000 feet.
And two old friends are back with us. John Arroyo, who's the master of mixology with Founding Farmers, and Dan Simon, who's a partner. They're in. They've got signature new distilled beverages for us to try, and we're going to hear about what's happening there. Why don't we start with you guys? It's been a while since you were in. Why don't you sort of catch us up on what's
Dan,
going on?
Dan, you got to get by Mike. Pick one.
Yeah, Dan is so shy.
Right.
You've got to
be easy on him. It's been a while.
he is. I know he's with a wallflower. But you guys have, it's not new anymore, but a rockin' and rolling restaurant on a Potomac that we were at, I think we did our remote there right after you opened.
Yeah.
And just tell us, give us an update. What's going on, man?
Well, I can give you an update from the spirit side. We're excited to announce that we're releasing our own gin label, Founding Farmers Gin. It's a single malt gin that we make in Sperryville, Virginia. We're excited to make some cocktails for you today.
Why don't you explain what a single malt gin is? Because you hear that about scotch,
but
I've
not
never
so
heard
much
about
gin.
Oh, that's a great question. So we
so excited.
I asked a great question.
Oh,
all right,
God.
Show's over. Stop it now.
I'm glad I could be of service. No, single malt is it's in the name. So we source out one malt that is grown in one harvest from a single farm. And a local farm out in Sperryville, Virginia. And we malt our own barley in the distillery, and that's it. We distill that, have all the botanicals that are grown on the distillery itself, and rock and roll, you have gin.
Well, so, Dan, let me bring this over to you. Why create your own spirits? I mean, I know you and John have worked together to create this really terrific bar program at all of your restaurants, but why create your own spirits?
I think we're a little control crazy.
Okay. I get control freak. I get that.
I want a divorce from both of you.
It's why we have our own bakery. If I could find someone who could make all our plates for us that was local, if we can produce it ourselves, we want to. So this was a chance for us to partner with a local distiller and really control that much more of our own beverage program.
And what were you looking for? I mean, what's in the... This goes out to both of you. Let's talk about the gin specifically. I mean, what's the profile of the gin that you were looking for that maybe you weren't finding in other gins?
That's a great question, Nikki.
Thank you.
You guys are full of them today.
I know. I keep coming.
I have another great question just in the queue.
It's all about the malt. One of the unique things that we do, well, first of all, you know, besides it being a Baltimore malt, it's actually... You know, supporting a local distiller. Rick Wassman is the master distiller for Copper Fox Distillery. Mm-hmm. And him and I, you know, conceptualized this gin based on what we were already doing correctly, in my opinion. We have a Founding Farmer's Rye, which is made with 1/3 local barley.
Okay.
So it's all local barley. So we took the same barley that we use in the rye and we used it in the gin. And just instead of it being any other grain involved, it's all
I thought gin
barley.
Was juniper or something.
Gin is botanical. Gin is a neutral grain spirit by definition. However, it must be a neutral grain spirit that is distilled with juniper as its main main botanical. So we do have juniper in it.
Mm-hmm.
The grain, however, that we use as the base for the gin is barley malt.
Okay.
And we take barley that's grown locally and malt it locally, which Rick is the only distiller in America that does that. Malts his own barley.
Well, Spartaville's
right beyond where the end of Little Washington is. The only thing we've ever had there that was good antiquing and good pulled pork. Where's the farm? Whose farm is it?
The farm, look, well, the distillery is in Sperryville. The farm is in the proximity of Sperryville, I think within a 5 to 6 mile radius. Good buddy of Rick's that he's been sourcing out barley from for years. And you've never been to the copper. I'm assuming you guys haven't been to the distillery. What's going on?
No, we're
going
to have to take a road trip. Yeah, we'll have to take a road trip.
We can get there. It's just hard to get home.
I see a bus charter in our future.
Party.
Well, how did you partner up with these guys?
Great questions. Dan, they're
brilliant.
Aren't you excited to be here?
Can I say something to you, John? Yeah. If you're not up till 4 in the morning, like if you get regular sleep, they're not so great. But for a guy like you and your shape.
Oh, I hear you.
Well, I was passionate about gin even before we found Rick. I'm pretty sure it's gin and tonics responsible for my third child.
Okay.
So I felt compelled that we should, you know,
Admit everything.
You know,
this whole
with
time.
Our brand.
Right.
Truth, I'll set you free. It's a funny story. I'll give you the small version or short version of it. When we were opening Founding Farmers DC, and it was still under construction, specifically the bar was well under construction, this guy walks in with a fedora cap and a leather satchel looking like a, you know, Target version of Indiana Jones.
Okay.
Don't tell that to Rick. I hope he's not listening. But and in walks Rick Wassman, and he opens his bag and he has whiskey in it. We instantly became friends, and immediately I twisted his arm and convinced him that he should be selling what I predict to be the future of whiskey in America at the time, which was rye. And lo and behold, everyone's drinking rye these days. And so we started the Rye Project, and it took maybe about a year for us to really find something that we liked and working through recipes. And, you know, a friendship was born, a long partnership thus far. He's been with us ever since.
What are you going to mix up first?
Well, that's great. No more great questions. Can I ask a question?
Yeah, ask a question.
But ask
how are you feeling today? Are you guys thirsty?
Yeah. Sure, man.
Great. I just wanted to ask one question.
No, we just invited
we're gonna
you
make
here.
For you. What I'm going to make you first is the first signature cocktail that I've made with the gin. Mm-hmm. It's called the Farm Daisy, and it's made with lemongrass syrup, fresh lemon juice, gin, and a little bit of green chartreuse, which is a botanical-driven spirits.
Cool. All right. So all now, right. Well, you get making that.
Now we're going to get our religion on because we've got Susan Barocas from the Jewish Food Experience again. She's a returning guest.
Yeah, it's always
so
a pleasure.
Tell us what the Jewish food experience is in your context, because we know what it is in ours.
Well, everyone has a Jewish food experience who's Jewish.
Yeah. I was gonna say, not everyone.
And many people who aren't. Half my Passover table is usually not Jewish. But the Jewish food experience is a project of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, and it's really designed... It's a website and programs designed literally to bring more Jews to the table, just to get people identity, getting them linked to the culture, the heritage, and to have fun with each other around food. I mean, there's nothing better for bringing people together.
Well, all right, so let's talk about the collision. It's like two meteors, the collision of Hanukkah and Thanksgiving.
Well, actually, before we talk about the collision, I think we should talk about Hanukkah.
Well, that's what I was. Yeah. I was getting there, man. I was
okay,
going to say,
well,
why everybody knows
time.
What. I hate you.
I know.
Everybody knows what Thanksgiving is. What's Hanukkah for these guys?
Well, Hanukkah is the one level. It's the excuse for Jews to eat fried food with no guilt.
Okay.
And to have your house
smell.
Not like
there's any guilt in Jewish religion. I mean.
Right. We need something without guilt.
I feel guilty
guilt.
Just saying that.
But Hanukkah is like Thanksgiving. It's a holiday that celebrates religious freedom. Mm-hmm. That happened, 5,000 years ago, and it's... really a wonderful collision in that the two holidays are both about celebrating religious freedom. They're both based in the home, and mm-hmm. they're both centered around food.
Right.
So what could be better?
But why fried foods for Hanukkah?
Ah, yes. Thank you. I like that you're feeding me the right lines.
I wrote that question.
Fried foods
no,
because when the Jews had overturned the Hellenic Greeks and Assyrians, mm-hmm. They went to the temple in Jerusalem, and it was a mess. And so the eternal light that's supposed to burn by the Ark, where the holy books, the Torah of Judaism, is always kept. There's supposed mm-hmm. to be a light always. And they needed special sacred oil for that light. They looked and they looked and they looked among all the ruins, and they found one little vial. And this little vial was enough to last for one day. But miracle of miracles, it lasted for eight. And so this idea that there's oil and 8 days mm-hmm. creates Hanukkah.
And so, but the fried foods, like there's specific fried foods. I mean, we have all these latkes in studio today. I mean, why do you think... Where did the fried food concept come from, like donuts and latkes? Like
from the idea of the oil.
From the oil. But, I mean, were latkes, was that a traditional food?
Not potatoes.
No,
potatoes
I know.
Potatoes in Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
But
right.
not everyone doesn't eat latkes. For instance,
okay.
in Syria, mm-hmm. at Hanukkah, they eat something called edge. And edge is kind of like what we would say is a skinny little omelet with tons of chopped up herbs.
Okay.
And that's their latke. So it's whatever your culture is.
Okay.
What does latke
eat-
mean? Pancake?
Oh, you stumped
uh-oh.
Her.
Uh-oh. Oh,
I got
somebody
her.
Looked this up. Uh-oh.
Oh, you must be a Reformed Jew.
Thank you,
Jew.
On air. No, I'm Sephardic.
All right, so how do you... What's, I mean, you get
how
Thanksgiving.
You mush them together?
Well, you got Thanksgiving. Is the first night of Hanukkah Thanksgiving?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
no,
it's
Lord.
The second night.
Oh,
I'm
is it
sorry.
The second night? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was the first.
So you got Thanksgiving leftovers and you've got Hanukkah. How do you put the two of them together?
Well, actually, you have that second night of Hanukkah is Thanksgiving. And so, many people make roast chicken with their latkes for Hanukkah anyway.
Sure.
So this year it's a turkey. You make stuffing instead of cornbread or whatever, mm-hmm. make challah. There's some really easy ways to blend the two. You all are having studio to taste a squash and corn latke, which is really a squash and corn fritter.
Okay.
But, from the South. Mm-hmm. But because it's Hanukkah, we're calling it a latke. And then you also have a sweet potato latke, which is based on a recipe in Jewish Cooking in America by Joan Nathan.
Sure.
It's a curried
Who?
Sweet...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. A curried sweet potato latke. When I was working with Joan years ago in Jewish Cooking in America... came out, I latched onto this recipe and have been making it for 20 years. And as Joan said, when you first started making sweet potato latkes in the early to mid-90s, everyone went, no, sorry, can't do that.
Because
it was too out of the box. Everyone was eating just potato latkes in the U.S. at that time, that mm-hmm. Eastern European influence.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, and we've got about 45 seconds before we're going to take a break, that people who are not familiar with Jewish culture or Jewish food, when they look at, this is basically a potato pancake.
Yeah.
They get all weirded out and they don't know what they're eating and they're, I don't know if, what is
it? No, I've never, I actually find that it's something people can relate to.
Right.
A lot more than tongue and kishka.
Right, exactly.
What did you say to me, baby?
All right, we have to take a quick break.
Family show.
All right, we have to take a quick break.
I'll give you a little quiche.
Okay, stop talking.
I can't help it.
We have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to do a little on-air Laka tasting and some more cocktail tasting. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Every year, thousands in the D.C. metro community come to the Salvation Army in need of help. In fact, in 2012 alone, the Salvation Army of the National Capital Region aided 81,946 individuals living across the greater Washington region. Crisis, hunger, and homelessness can happen anytime to virtually anyone. So when you see their bell ringers and red kettles out this holiday season, make a donation and feel good knowing you're contributing to the well-being of your friends, neighbors, and the greater Washington community.
You can help families overcome the challenges of autism. The Virginia Institute of Autism, or VIA, a nonprofit school and outpatient program, is looking for passionate professionals to provide a range of applied behavior, analytic assessment, and clinical services for children with autism spectrum disorders and related developmental disabilities within an hour radius of Charlottesville, Virginia. Potential BCBA supervisors, behavior technicians, and instructors should visit viaschool.org or call 434-923-8252.
Misuse of prescription pain medication can lead to addiction, brain damage, even death. If you or someone you know are abusing prescription medications, call the Addiction Treatment 24-Hour Helpline at 1-800-662-HELP. That's 1-800-662-HELP. Prescription drug misuse ruins lives. Don't let it happen to your friends or you. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Uber conferences is free. You basically decide who you want in the phone call, and you set up the time for the phone call. Like, I want to make a conference call at 2 o'clock tomorrow. And you could put all these people in a group, so you could easily just add the group. And then what happens, at the time of the conference call, Uber call calls everybody, and it also sends them an email, and they're in the conference. Huh.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we're talking to Susan Barocas of the Jewish Experience.
Jewish food.
What do I know? I'm just, again.
Right.
That's why I'm here.
I'm reformed.
Right.
So you guys were talking about how to handle the leftovers.
Well, we weren't talking about that. We were talking about how to combine Thanksgiving dishes, right. your traditional right. Thanksgiving dishes, with Hanukkah dishes, since the holidays are colliding. Why is it such a big deal that the holiday is colliding? What do you think?
That's a really good question. Okay. I'm not sure. I can't figure it out. There are people that started having things in September online about this, and mm-hmm. there's T-shirts, and there's, you know, menorkies, which is a turkey menorah you can buy. And
we have one here.
I know I have in studio a little homemade one that I made, because, you know, once every 70,000 years, I'm not going to go out and buy one,
right.
but I'll spend $2 on some felt turkeys and stick them
it's
on my
cute.
Menorah. Yeah, it's a
very,
lot
very
of fun.
Cute.
There's something wrong with both of you.
Look, you got to get in the spirit.
No,
here.
I know.
Yes,
but,
you
want
a drink.
And what about leftovers? What are some of your suggestions for leftovers?
So leftovers are amazing. First of all, I also want to get in one other thing.
Yes.
Fried turkey.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this is like the opportunity of a lifetime to do as they do in the South mm-hmm. and deep fry a turkey.
So now, do you do that normally?
Would I?
Yeah.
No, I'm not doing this.
Okay.
I'm not deep frying a turkey. But if anyone dares to do it, there's great instructions on our website, jewishfoodexperience.com,
okay.
about how to go set it up in your driveway, by the way, on concrete with mm-hmm. no little children or dogs around,
mm-hmm.
And fry a turkey.
Actually, Cuisinart has one for your countertop.
It must be huge, though.
It is huge, but you can do it, and it's supposed to be excellent.
Oh, that is so cool.
There you go.
Now you're tempting me.
I know,
well,
right?
All right. Brad Walker's here from Boundary Road. You're going to be doing that for us, right, Brad?
Right, you're going to deep fry a turkey?
No?
In studio? He's like,
no, I did bring my turkey deep fryer.
There we go.
It's in the car.
It's in the car. It's in the trunk.
Hey, Brad, can I borrow that on November 28th?
Awesome.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, so
leftovers, really quickly, let me tell you, there's such a great marriage of the food that you can do. How about something like a savory Napoleon, where you take your leftover latkes and you layer them, perhaps spreading them with a little cranberry sauce. You put some leftover turkey in between and another latke and some more turkey and another latke, and you dump gravy on the whole thing.
That sounds yummy.
Yeah.
How bad can that sound?
Or even when you're sneaking into the refrigerator and late at night, just stick some turkey. No. Stick some turkey between a leftover latke on top of a leftover latke. It is a great combination.
That does sound like a good combination. I like that. Like a little latke sandwich. That sounds good.
It's wonderful. And use that leftover cranberry sauce. Also, it sounds like a Dagwood.
It does sound like a Dagwood. It really does.
You know, another way you can marry these, by the way, leftover or the night of, is when you make that cranberry sauce. Well, sour cream is really traditional to have on latkes. Mm-hmm. So throw some cranberry sauce in it, or just put a dollop like we have in the studio. Sweet potato latkes with a little bit of yogurt or sour cream and some cranberry sauce on it.
That's delicious. You just finished it. I know, because I'm a glutton, but you really don't mess with sour cream.
David is a purist when it comes to sour cream.
Unfortunately, have to wrap with you. You got a website. Lay it on. We do.
Lots of recipes, right?
A lot of recipes and a lot of great stories. We have our top 10 that we just put up, which is really a top 11 this year, with recipes by people like Joan and Todd and Ellen from Equinox and a bunch of other good foodies. JewishFoodExperience.com.
Great.
And we hope you'll check us out and have a great holiday, whatever you celebrate.
Right. You too. We'll see you next year, I'm sure.
Okay, good. All right.
I want to go back to Dan and John. Tell us what the experience
is like.
We're
here all day.
I know. Dan, when you're sitting around and you're trying to come up with the rye whiskey that you like or the gin that you like how...
Are you like mad scientist?
How cranked do you get? Are you like mad scientist?
You need to drink a lot. and I think that the more you drink, the better you get.
Really?
Absolutely. Your palate expands, right?
Johnny, tell them about a process.
Well, first of all, you know, you have to have passion about whatever it is that you're going to make, in my belief. If you have passion, then... it sells itself. Mm-hmm. But we were passionate. There's a lot of gin drinkers in our world at the farm, Dan included. We just wanted to decide. It started with what kind of gin? What's the expression? What are we looking for? What kind of gins do we like?
What kind of gins do you like?
My opinion on that was, two things need to happen. This gin needs to be able to make a good martini. Mm-hmm. And this gin needs to be able to make a pretty decent gin and tonic. And also, I guess there's three great cocktails, you know, it has to have some versatility to it, but we also wanted to protect the expression of single malt, you know, because it's great. You know, the fact that we're growing our own malt or we're growing our own barley and malting our own barley, I didn't want to hide that expression. Mm-hmm. So we built the gin around that.
Okay.
So, and what you have is a very unique, and actually, you know what? I'm going to pass you a taste of just the gin.
I would like to smell it.
Yeah. Because it's single malt, and there are different types of barley. Mm-hmm. We use a 6-row barley for this particular batch.
Okay.
I'm going to pass Dan. Do you mind passing that on, Dan?
Sure. Thank you.
But it's evolved. I mean, it's a process. In the beginning, it was a little rough, and I thought...
Why was it rough?
Well, I felt like we were making it in the bathtub at first. Okay. I mean,
Were you in the bathtub at the time?
I ended up in the bathtub, I think.
Kinky.
Dan, will you pass this down?
Sure. Okay.
All right.
So, what I like to say is it's like if Scotch and gin had a baby.
Okay.
And what you have is Founding Farmers Gin.
Mm-hmm. A lot of baby talk here today.
Yeah, a lot of baby talk.
So when most people come in and talk about gin, they talk about the botanical specifically because they feel that that's the crux of what gives the gin its profile.
It gives its own personal characteristics.
Okay,
but all gins have to start with some form of a neutral grain. And we decided that our neutral grain was going to be barley malt. Mm-hmm. And we built the gin around that. And we also decided... do we want a botanically driven gin, or do you want, if you've tasted gins, you know, you have several different brands out there, but you have to decide what kind of gin drinker are you?
Right.
You know, do you like the very dry, crisp, botanical driven gins, or do you like more on the fruity, floral side?
Right.
We decided we wanted, just like all of our flavors in the restaurants, we wanted big flavors. So what you do is when you get a whiff of the gin, you get the big barley malt.
Yes, you do.
But then when you go into the taste of the gin, you get our expression of our botanicals in it, which you'll taste the mint that's grown on the distillery and such.
All right. Okay. So we're going to taste this new drink.
What did you make next?
What we have there is we also have a concept on Georgetown called Farmers, Fishers, Bakers, and our bar there is tiki driven. Mm-hmm. So what I made you there is a naked scorpion.
Okay.
So it's a scorpion, but it's clear. Made with our gin.
Well, I like the word naked. All right. Well, while Nikki is getting into her naked scorpion, yes. We've got a special guest on the phone. James Clure is the Qatar Airways Master of Wine. James, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
So, I'm doing great.
How's life in Napa?
Life in Napa is pretty good. It's going to be another sunny day, so sorry to make you jealous.
Now, I'm going to have to cut you off then. I'm sorry. So, James, why don't we start from the top here? What exactly is a Master of Wine, and what does it take to earn that accreditation?
Well, a Master of Wine, there's about 308 of us in the world now, and I suppose theoretically you could complete the program in about 4 years, but some of us like to take longer. So I was up around the 11-year mark, and I guess it's just it's a pretty tricky series of tasting and theoretical exams. And then there's also a dissertation or a thesis at the end of it. So, you have to be accepted into the program, and it's a big, long process. But it's kind of nice when you're done.
Well, as I say, the challenge sounds like remembering all of that while you're drinking. That ain't bad.
That can be tricky. They have the tasting test before the written test, during the day. So that does make life more
tricky. They're tricking you up.
You're spitting, of course, so it's all very serious.
Well, let's talk about, so now that you're working with Qatar Airways, let's talk about what they're doing there, because they've created a whole new cuisine for their flights, and you've put together a wine program to complement that. And I think one of the things you and I have talked about before is that it's at 30,000 feet, your palate changes. So how do you put together a wine portfolio that can be served on Qatar Airways that people can enjoy?
Well, you're absolutely right. Your palate does change up at high altitude there, partly because of the drier atmosphere in the cabin and various other factors there too. Of course, on a long flight, you typically get tired. So we do spend a lot of time working on selecting wines that are going to show particularly well up at 35,000 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the keys to our wine program there is to select wines that have perhaps a little bit more richness, a little bit more body, concentration, and power than wines that you might normally select for, say, service on the ground or in a restaurant. And so there are different elements of wine that we look for, slightly softer tannins, nothing too sharply acidic, nothing too monstrously alcoholic either, because it tends to have a bit of a faster effect up at 35,000 feet too. So we do spend a lot of time considering the effects of altitude when we select our wines.
So give us an example of some of the wines. Like, let's pick one red and one white, for example, that you feel have the right effect at that kind of altitude.
Well, we're very fortunate I'm very fortunate to work with Qatar Airways because they're so focused on creating effectively a restaurant atmosphere in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It really is like a five-star experience. And so we have on board a lot of the most famous wines in the world. And to pick one in red, I would go for Smith-O Lafite, which is a Bordeaux red,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes been rated 100 points by Robert Parker. And it's a wine that, although it's a Bordeaux and so it does have a certain tannic backbone, it certainly has more fruit ripeness and fruit forward characteristic than some of its other neighbors, for example. So Smith-O Lafite is a fantastic wine that we have on board. In white, we have a series of different German Rieslings, in fact, from the Mosel Valley, from Dr. Lozen.
It's always a Riesling. Why is that? Always a Riesling.
Well, us wine people and Riesling.
You all love your Riesling,
we
I know.
We love our Riesling. What
I guess he's got a good Riesling.
Oh, wow, we're going bruising. I tell you, partly, well, we've got fine white Burgundy on board, excellent New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, a whole range of wines. But I picked the German Riesling because it shows particularly well up at 35,000 feet. It's got really intense aromatics, right? So it jumps out of the glass because it's hard to smell things when you're, you know, up in the sky. You're less sensitive. And then also with a little bit of residual sugar, a little bit of sweetness, really complements the spicy dishes on our a la carte menus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another example of a wine that we like to buy that suits our cuisines or some of them, and also shows well up there.
James, we have to take a quick break, but can you hang on the phone? Because when we come back, we want to ask you. We know you went to the base camp at Mount Everest. We want to talk about drinking wines up there.
Okay.
All right. Great. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be back in just a sec.
Hi, this is Celine Dion asking you to help put an end to premature birth. I share the concerns and fears of every parent, knowing that more than 1 million babies around the world die every year simply because they didn't get enough time to grow. Let's work together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit facebook.com/worldprematurityday to find out how you can make a difference. Thank you for caring.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
Are you interested in obtaining a patent or trademark? The United States Patent and Trademark Office and the District of Columbia Public Library are sponsoring a series of free workshops at the MLK Jr. Memorial Library, located at 901 G Street Northwest. These free workshops are open to the public on November 19th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Simultaneous sessions will cover patents, trademarks, or copyrights. To register, call 202-727-1161 or send an email to education@uspto.gov.
We're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and our guest on the phone is James Clour. He's the master of wine for Qatar Airways. And James, I know Nikki wants to talk about the Everest Base Camp, but before we get out of the plane, I just have a question, because that airline in particular serves a very high-end clientele. It doesn't mean that anybody wouldn't be on there, but it's a lot of business travel back and forth from Europe and the Far East and the U.S. to the Middle East. So, I mean, how much training do you have to do with the people on the flights? Because I'm sure you're going to have clientele, and I don't mean this in a negative way, who might get a little snooty and say, well, I need a blankety-blank-blank that you might not have. And so are they all trained to explain why they don't have that particular vintage because of altitude, et cetera?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you bring up a big point there. I mean, it's one thing to have a fantastic selection of wines available, but a lot of passengers, just like in a restaurant, they're looking for some guidance. And so all of our cabin crew in the premium classes are trained through the Wine and Spirit Education Trust wine programs, which are professional certification courses in wine. And there's exams, and it's, you know, it all gets quite serious. So, you know, we've run thousands and thousands of training courses in the Middle East, so that you get a sommelier-style service in the sky with your meal from famous chefs and some beautiful wines. It's, you know, for me, honestly, compared to flying normally on other airlines, it's a big difference, what can I say? Of course, I'm a little bit biased, but no, it's true. You have to go and experience it.
I think we do have to go and experience.
Are the tickets in the mail, my good friend?
Well, let's talk about Mount Everest. So tell us how this whole thing came to be, because I think it's fascinating.
Well, I had wanted to go for a number of years. In fact, I met a mountaineer who told me all about it, and she told me that I could actually make it to base camp, and I was shocked by that. And so it was on my bucket list, and I always loved the idea of the Himalayas. And so I booked the trip and through a Canadian organization called Peak Freaks. And then I had to tell Cathay Airways I was going to be out of touch for a while. And so they asked me where I was going, what I was doing, and I told them, and they said, well, we spend so much time talking about how the wines are going to taste up in the sky, and then we do taste them up in the sky. Why don't you take a selection of wines to base camp and try them there?
Well, and base camp is about, 21,000 feet, is that right?
Yeah, just a little bit less, 18, so it's pretty high. And so anyway, I took a selection of wines from our first-class list, like Chateau d'Yquem and Krug and Jucru Bocayu and beautiful Napa Cab and a white Burgundy. And we did a wine tasting up there, me and a Sherpa. It was a lot of fun.
Now, did you take a chopper up, or you literally walked with all this wine up to base camp?
And we had to take two bottles of each just in case one was caught.
Now I know there's something wrong with you.
No, that's smart. I love that.
Yeah, it took 12 days to get there. And, there was some moments when I didn't think we were going to make it. But actually, honestly, it's not that hard, physically, I would say. To tell the truth, but the difficulty there is if you get altitude sick, and also food poisoning, and those are two things that are probably more of a danger than the actual sort of physical exertion, because as my Sherpa said, take slow.
No, that's why we'll stay here at ground zero.
Right. Dave, that's something David's just not doing.
Well, Jane, thanks so much for joining us. Where can we find more information about the wine program at Qatar Airways?
Well, you can go on Cathay Airways website and you'll be able to see lists of our different wines. And there's a contest running currently in Wine Spectator, in fact, where you can enter to win. And I direct you towards Cathay Airways website. That's the place to learn more and see which destinations they fly to and book a trip, book a holiday.
All right, excellent. Thank you so much for joining us this morning, James. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. All right, cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay. So, John and Dan, back to you. I'm not a big whiskey drinker because it's just too...
I'm becoming one.
I'm sorry. I know.
David, you just broke my heart.
Yeah, she's tough, yeah. But this is very smooth. How do you do that? How do you sort of...
Well, as luck would have it for you, you're not drinking whiskey. You're still drinking the gin.
I am. What's in there? What is
that's
that?
How amazing it is. That's what you're getting.
I better get a different show.
It's right. a new signature cocktail we'll be featuring at
what's in here, though?
Farmers, Fishers, Bakers. It is gin, a little bit of rum, cognac.
Come on, you put gin and rum and cognac together. That's whiskey. Come on, man.
Well, there's a famous tiki cocktail called the Scorpion, and it originally had
this is the
gin,
naked scorpion.
And that's the naked scorpion, and it has no citrus in it. Instead of the citrus, I substituted lemon bitters and orange bitters for it. Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, it's got a very whiskey-ish taste.
Well,
taste that.
Everyone
I
wins.
I tasted it. I did. Yeah, don't spill it on
me. Don't be sorry. Yeah. You don't have to be a genius to love our drink.
Thank God. Exactly. Wait a minute. What does he mean by that?
I do have a delicious whiskey cocktail coming to you next.
All right, what are you making next?
We're going to make what is a very popular cocktail. It's kind of old school now for us. It was one of our original cocktails with the rye. It's Farmer's Smash. So it's a little bit of a lemon, orange,
this is what you drink before you go out to harvest the crops.
And get smashed, yes. Absolutely.
Right. How come those rows are so crooked? All right,
well, we're going to let you put that together.
Next up.
Brad.
Brad Walker. Brad. So, Brad, what's it like to open your first restaurant?
It's, that's also a great question.
Well, I'm full of them today, apparently.
It's been definitely the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. And it's been incredibly gratifying. We, I've been working in restaurants since I was 15 years old.
Yeah, let's get your quick, just do a quick history, sure, like where, how you got into it, where you've been, and how you wound up opening up your own restaurant.
I mean, how did Boundary Road happen? That's the other question.
Sure thing. So I started working in restaurants as a busboy and a dishwasher when I was 15, 16.
Mm-hmm.
And realized just how much fun you could have in a restaurant, especially at that age.
what was her name? you can't remember.
I can't remember. So, you know, typical story. Went to college after that. That was outside of Baltimore. So I worked in Crab Shacks in a town called Bel Air.
Mm-hmm.
Went to college. Yeah, not like Bel Air, California.
No.
Kind of the opposite
Bel Air,
side of
Bel Air, Maryland.
Equation.
Yeah,
now
we've
we're
all 15
minutes from Kensington.
We've all
we
seen the exit. We know where it is.
Yeah. But anyway, so left, went to school, Gettysburg College. Spent the entire time working in restaurants. After school, moved to Colorado, also worked in restaurants. The whole time, like, trying to break out of restaurants for a career path, and it's...
Just kept coming back to it?
No, well, yeah, the world kind of rejected me, sent me back to restaurants a couple times, fortunately for me. And then I decided to... It took the message and went serious with it, and then started cooking, went to cooking school, opened up with Central. Moved over to Proof. Cash and Z Place was a huge influence. Went there for a while.
So, but you're, you know, when I read a little bit about your background, you've traveled a lot, and the menu at the restaurant is very eclectic. It's, I mean, you source locally, that everybody seems to be doing,
right?
But it's a little bit of an influence. I even saw an influence from beef tartare that you had in Lyon.
Right, exactly. So one of the things we do at Boundary Road is we approach food simply with those local ingredients, the high quality ingredients, and we put a small twist on it. But as a cook, I'm fairly conservative. I like to stick to flavor profiles that work, that are tried and true. I call it peasant food, food that poor people have been cooking for a long, long time. So in this specifically, this dish, my wife and I got our first trip away from the restaurant this past fall. We went to Lyon, kind of the background of the story is a bunch of cooks and I have been talking about this dish called vitella tonnato for a long time. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Okay, cool. It's roasted veal served chilled and a mayonnaise made with tuna, anchovy, and some spices.
So, it doesn't sound like it should work.
Exactly.
But it does.
Because it's a umami bomb, right?
Right.
And so I had this dish in Lyon and it was just earth shattering. It was so good. It was just, it hit it on all levels. I took the sauce is really is the killer there. So twisting that a little bit into beef tartare, that's the dressing we use for the tartare.
Okay.
The other components there, you want a lot of variability because tartare is obviously it's chopped raw meat. You want some crunch. Just like that dish I had in Lyon, it's where we have a lot of different components of both, you know, red onion, which is going to give you a little bit of pungent punch. House pickle, green beans, cornichon, capers, like salty pops.
It sounds so good.
Give a lot of different variability in the dish because it's definitely a dish that I feel like screams for
what?
Screams for to keep it from being boring and bland. It needs those little
pops,
surprising bites.
All right. Well, before you get into making the dish, tell us a little bit for people who aren't familiar with your restaurant, because you are on H Street Northeast, which is this really exploding area.
Totally. Yeah.
What brought you over there? I mean, given that you were like at Proof and Central, I mean, you were more Penn Quarter and Adams Morgan, but
Rent. what brought him over there.
It's one of the cool things about the scene in D.C. right now is you have these smaller time guys like me. Guys that worked in the industry for a long time, we're not going to raise millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like Red Hen.
Same exactly. Yeah. Right. And it's fantastic restaurant.
Yeah.
It's guys doing it for themselves out in the neighborhoods. And H Street Northeast, it's my favorite neighborhood in town. There's really no place I'd rather be.
And what were you looking to bring? Because your restaurant, having been there, is very different, I think, from the other restaurants that are there. Don't you feel?
Sure. Absolutely.
I mean,
I can't comment because I haven't been there.
It's because he doesn't get out. It's his own problem.
Right.
It's not the other side of the moon. Some people feel like that. But
yeah.
It's really just like a 10-minute car drive. So what we wanted, that was something, before we picked out where Boundary Road was going to be, we knew we wanted to be a solid neighborhood restaurant that did simple food, but was interesting. Something that could live in that place between
a nice dinner out with a bottle of wine, appetizers, entrees, but also a place to stop. We have a large bar for just a snack and a drink, a gathering place. It's creating that neighborhood place that is an institution.
Right.
And it's taken a lot of work, and we've taken some major steps to getting there. But it's, like I said, it can be what you want it to be.
Well, I think it's always very a fine line for restaurants such as yours. Like, you want to be this neighborhood destination given your neighborhood and the people who are living there, but you also want people from other neighborhoods to come in and check you out. You know, being a little bit of everything to everybody.
Exactly. And then doing some, you know, from classical dishes, like we have a braised tripe pasta right now.
Okay.
Which is definitely one of the more challenging things. And
I would imagine so.
When I talk to customers, it's the first thing I recommend, and I've gotten the trust of lots of our regulars that they'll dive in and they really, really enjoy it. And it's great. It's really gratifying to see that. We have an excellent roasted chicken. That's something you know you can come in, walk out your door, walk around the corner, and come in and have an excellent chicken.
Okay.
Then we do a foie gras torchon, peanut butter and jelly. So that's something that someone might be
I just made one this morning.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We have to take a quick break.
Sure.
When we come back, we're going to have some beef tartare in studio. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. Cannot wait.
Hubba
this
hubba.
Is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Signs, so subtle we may not notice them. Signs like loss of interest in activities. Signs like insomnia, fatigue, or withdrawing from friends.
Hey, dear, come play cards with us.
Even talking about wanting to die. These are signs of depression.
Hi, my name is Smitty. My husband, Congressman Jerry Connolly, and I urge you to take signs of depression seriously. Let your loved one know you care, then seek help from a doctor or mental health professional.
Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, Mom, why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We just got a hot flash that Dan Simon's son, Cooper, and his basketball team made the finals. I just saw a picture of Cooper. He's about 10. He's 10, so he's about 3'9". But he's a slam-a-jamma, according to Dan, so congratulations to Cooper. All right, so Brad, we're back to you. Brad Walker is a co-owner and executive chef of Boundary Road Restaurant at 8th Street, and he are making
Northeast.
Us...
8th Street Northeast.
What did I say, Northeast?
You just said 8th Street.
Northeast.
Okay, very good.
And Northwest. And you're going to make some tartare, yes?
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about it.
So we're featuring local beef. It's actually not far from where I grew up. In Northern Harper County, there's a farm called Piedmont Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
We buy Eye of Round. It's a great lean cut. So what we do is we hand cut it.
Is that classic to be used for tartare? What's normally used?
You know, you can use... No, I mean, literally, I think classically, you're talking steak, right?
Right, right.
So, and then you have the marbling in there. So one of the things that you do with the Eye of Round, and one of the reasons why I like it so much, is the consistency of texture.
Okay.
It's very dense.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's all about the way that the meat stands up to the dressing. And then that's, I'm not a particular fan of grinding tartare.
Okay.
To me, that's, it's
you
not.
You gotta chop it.
Exactly. So the Eye of Round stands out really nicely for that cut. For that purpose, excuse me. So then we're going to, like I said, we made the same sauce as Vitel Tonnato. So it's a mayonnaise sauce. You start with the egg yolk. You emulsify olive oil in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Tuna. Good canned olive oil packed tuna.
Okay.
I'm sure you guys are aware, like the seafood canned in Europe is quite a bit different than, you know, Starkist or whatever.
Right.
It is here. So we use that tuna. We use anchovy. That's going to give you the umami that we were talking about. Mm-hmm. A little bit of Worcestershire, a little bit of hot sauce, a little bit of soy, and a little bit of paprika.
Go okay, crazy. Great.
All right, so, let's see. Have you start mixing it. So okay. While you're mixing it, you also do have a really good bar program.
We do.
So not to compete with John over here.
Not
But how did you...
That's a salt with an ice cube right there.
What was it that you wanted in your bar program?
So we wanted the... Especially the beverage program is under the control of Brendan Mulderosi, our beverage director. Mm-hmm. And it's... We've had a couple of great... Daniel Eichner and then Aaron Lingle. And they've kind of... They've taken it and ran with it. Mm-hmm. The wines, I'm a wine drinker. I really wanted... To match the food, I wanted those rustic, out-of-the-way wines, things you're not going to see everywhere.
Okay.
We're going to pour a little bit of Le Dilettante. It's a Chenin Blanc. It's going to be, you know, those classic French. It's going to be minerally. It's a little bit of honey, a little bit of grapefruit kind of thing going on. It's going to go well with the tartare.
Okay.
Most of those wines, you're going to see that same kind of thing. It's going to be rustic. It's going to be something you're not going to see in every list.
Mm-hmm.
I love Carignan, for example. And then it matches up with the peasant food that we serve.
Now, tell us about the farms that you work with. How did you make these partnerships? Is this just through your years of cooking throughout D.C., or were you seeking out specific farms for certain reasons? Like, how did you go about curating the farms that you work with?
Sure. Mostly, yes. It's who you come across while you're working in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how we came into contact with, we work with a Mennonite farming co-op up in outside Chambersburg, PA, called Earth and Eats.
Right.
When they showed up, they were in the traditional Mennonite wear, but they're wearing Bluetooth, which is...
so bizarre.
You're like, right?
Now, they're not supposed to.
Mennonite.
Mennonite.
Oh, that's right. They're not Amish.
Right.
Okay.
So...
what about the women Mennonites?
Okay,
never
that's
mind.
Enough.
All right.
Oh, no.
He is officially cut off after that one.
So, let's see, a couple of other local producers. New Frontier Bison is out there in Madison, Virginia. We mm-hmm. run a lot of bison over at Boundary Road. Let's see, Northern Neck Fruits and Vegetables. Those are all people that we came into contact through Cashins.
Okay.
To answer your question, we didn't specifically go out to find these farmers to do something specially for us. I kind of like to start from the farm, and then mm-hmm. we work from there.
Okay.
So I get an email twice a week from the farmer saying, this is what's available, and then that's how we write the menu.
Okay. So you change your menu every week?
We change it almost daily. We tweak it, but we do have kind of consistent things that run through, and then there's major changes every season.
Okay.
So based on even micro-seasonally, what's available, what's not. Sometimes in the, you know...
So with the change of seasons going on right now, what are some of the big items that are on your menu?
Sure. Bison short ribs. We're doing those with smoked fingerling potatoes.
I love bison.
I know.
I love
it's great.
It. It's so good. It's like what steak should taste like.
Exactly.
I love it.
Hormone free. That's one of the big reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Look how pretty.
we're doing the bison short ribs braised, you know, for 3 hours. Red wine. We make a really nice bison stock, which is really kind of the most important part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So like I said, smoked fingerling potatoes and garlic broccoli. Simple. See some of the other fall dishes we have on right now. We're doing the roasted chicken I was talking about. We're doing with sunchokes, rutabaga, and bright light Swiss chard from down there in Northern Neck.
Wow.
That tripe pasta is really great on a cold day.
So right. We're going to have to go in and try that. Tripe scares me, just
I
so
know,
you know.
No, it scares
doesn't
a lot
scare
of people.
Me.
It scares me.
It's just super beefy. It's my favorite thing we've ever made.
All right. Unfortunately, Brad, we're at the end of the show.
The tartare is gorgeous.
Go find Boundary Road Restaurant on H Street Northeast. Tell Brad you heard about him on Foodie and the Beast, and you'll get a good meal. Right?
And a good glass of wine.
And a good glass of wine. Thanks. Back to John and Dan. Guys, this last drink is a killer.
So
it's delicious.
You know,
actually, I love this one.
A la
Mad
Men.
Really
there's nothing better than to start your day and end your day with a martini.
Mm-hmm.
So the last cocktail that you're tasting, the cocktail you're tasting now, that is the Farmer Smash. It's made with our founding farmer's rye.
Mm.
Our rye, unique thing about our rye is we smoke our malt with... at local apple and cherry wood that's sourced out locally in the in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But the last cocktail made for you is a cocktail variation on what most cocktail historians consider the original martini,
okay.
The Martinez,
And we call ours the Farmtinez. Do you have your cymbals ready, Dave? So we have the Farmtinez. So basically what it
Ba-doom.
Is, there we go. We do a dry version of the Martinez, which the original Martinez was gin, sweet vermouth, a little bit of maraschino, and bitters.